I am fantasy and paranormal romance author Leslie Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, October 7th, 2023, and this is episode 223 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. Just as a reminder, you can sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, and that includes the show notes directly in your inbox, as well as inspiration, strategies, and ideas to help you grow as a writer and as a creative. That's at myimaginaryfriends.net/footnotes. When you sign up, you can choose to become an imaginary best friend for a few dollars a month and get access to the premium posts, which are long-form craft essays, as well as discounts on my courses. So please join me over there. This week's best thing are the Preptober videos that I've been doing. I've been going live on YouTube on Mondays and Wednesdays in October of 2023 as part of the prep for NaNoWriMo. I decided to do NaNoWriMo a few weeks ago and just kind of put this together and decided I would do my planning, walk through the process that I do in the Imaginary World Building course, but because it really is my process as I'm getting ready for a new book. And so this is a brand new idea, brand new world. And so far, it's been a lot of fun. We've done two so far. Shout out to everyone who has joined me there, whether live or on the replay. It has been really cool and I'm getting good feedback for it. So if you want to join us, you can sign up. There's a newsletter that just sends out reminders on the day of. And that is at myimaginaryfriends.net/nano, N-A-N-O. Link is in the show notes. But sort of doing it live and sort of explaining it as I do it, it reinforces why I'm doing the things I do. And it reminds me, oh yeah, like this makes sense. And this has helped me before to get through the planning into the writing. So I'm finding it helpful for me, if not for anyone else, but I do think it is helping other people too. So my writing update. Before I can do NaNoWriMo, I need to finish the book I'm actually writing, the third book in my Bliss Wars trilogy, which is Brutal Fortress. So I'm about 20,000 words in of an expected, no, I'm like 30,000 words in of an expected 50,000 word draft. So actually I did 10,000 words this week. My goal is 10,000 words a week, but then I remembered, I hadn't done a schedule for this, so I was just sort of spitballing it, just sort of winging it, and that's never the best idea, at least for me. So when I looked at my contract for Orbit, which says 3 months are supposed to happen between their books and my self-published books, and as at the moment, the Black Towns book, Daughter of the Merciful Deep, is scheduled for June. So this book, Brutal Fortress, needs to come out in March. And I was thinking a PolyCon, which is the end of April. That's what happened with the last book. So I released book two in the series at a PolyCon and that worked really well. But just upon review, and since this year I didn't have a book come out from Orbit. The Monsters We Defy came out August of 2022. So it wasn't an issue. But yeah, this book needs to come out in March. The audiobook publishers, I sold my audiobook rights. They want to have it same day. So backtracking from that just means I have to work faster. It means that my luxurious pace of finishing the first draft in October has to be sped up a little, which I think is fine because I'm over halfway done at 30,000 words. I really need to be done in the next 2 weeks. If at all possible, week and a half would be ideal. So I have to really, instead of writing 10,000 words a week, which was my goal, it's going to be 15,000 words a week. And fast draft words, just really dumping them out, I can do it. It's a little uncomfortable to add that extra 5,000 words a week, but it's, you know, I downloaded this calculator, this writing schedule calculator. And I put in, oh, I think it asked me, you know, how many words do you usually write on average in 30 minutes? And I can easily write 1,000 words very conservatively in 30 minutes when I'm flowing. And it's like, how many hours do you write a day? And I was like, all right, 3 hours a day. And so then it spit out this crazy number. I'm like, oh, wait. I block off 3 to 4 hours a day to write, but I am not writing 1,000 words every 30 minutes in those 3 hours. Like there's eating, there's thinking, there's talking, there is procrastinating. So functionally, even though I can write 1,000 words in 30 minutes, in that 3 hours, I will get 2,000 to 2,500. And that was kind of an eye opener for me because as much as I love schedules and planning, and I sort of, I guess in part of my mind knew that, but I'd never, or not in my memory, have looked at it in that way until I did this calculator. So then I was like, oh, okay, I spend a lot of time fooling around. Not only fooling around, there is the planning time, which is totally legitimate. You need space, you need to think, but during those, if I'm writing from 8, and I forget they're like 8:15, till noon, which often happens, between 11 and 12, I stop writing in the mornings, I should be getting more done. And I'm going to be taking that with me, trying to up my productivity. You know, I've already set aside the time, so why not maximize the time as opposed to what I have been doing, which has just been coasting. And I'm setting myself a little bit more of an aggressive deadline. Now, the editing process has to be more aggressive too, because I have to get this book edited and to the audiobook producers so that they have, at the moment I'm thinking they need 3 months. I'm going to verify this with them this week just to make sure that I'm not rushing for no reason. And maybe they can do it in 2 months, but right now 3 months, which means December. It has to be edited, polished, complete, turned in before Christmas. And when I looked at it like that, I was like, oh, I need to get to work. I need to stop lollygagging. Because I think I've been lollygagging. I mean, there's legitimate reasons why I had to focus on the revision for Daughter of the Merciful Deep because of the deadline. But this is a deadline too. And I was not thinking of it that way since it's self-published. Anyway, I think I can do it. The revision is going to be aggressive also, but the fast draft is going well. I'm learning things. I work from an outline, and the outline was good, but there were several points where I have something happening for a reason that makes no sense. And I had to, on the fly, realize that what I'm saying doesn't match the rules I've set up for the world or even the logic of life, and fix it on the fly, and really trust my subconscious that I'm not creating plot holes. I do feel like, even though I'm a plotter, I am flying by the seat of my pants to the extent that I do because of the changes that I'm having to make on the fly. But it's the third book in the trilogy. It's been on my mind for a couple of years. So I think I have to trust my brain, my subconscious, my muse, creativity, whatever it is, wherever the stories come from, source, whatever you want to call it. I have to trust that it's going to come together because it always does. We need it to come together on a timeline, which it always does, but it's still not the most comfortable thing in the world. I've been keeping a written log during this book as sort of a diary, just a Google Doc where at the end of each writing session, I type in some notes. And yeah, this week it's like, I don't like feeling rushed with my creativity. And I'm feeling like the story is rushed and I'm worried it's going to steal my joy, but it really hasn't. Like I wrote that, you know, that fear that the rushing would steal the joy of the writing process, but it sort of motivates me. It kicks me into higher gear and it is forcing me to grow. And like, if you are a longtime listener, you know that this is a year that has forced me to grow and continues to do so. So I'm going to try to rise to the challenge and think of it as a challenge. Something came across my YouTube feed from a creator that I follow, and I do not recall his name, but I will put it in the show notes. It was, instead of thinking of things as problems, think of them as puzzles. A puzzle is something that you can solve, and at the end, you've grown, you've stretched, you're better, you're stronger, you're smarter, because it was a puzzle and it was a challenge. And reframing how you look at things can affect what you do and how you grow, how you, these issues, these things, these problems, these puzzles affect you. So I really liked that. I'm going to try to shift my framework from various things in life being problems to being puzzles, and puzzles can be solved. Problems can be solved too, but puzzles sounds like it's more fun. With a puzzle, you know it's going to be challenging, but you know that all of the pieces are there. Assuming all of the pieces are there, that it's something that can be conquered, and you just have to apply yourself until you get it. It might take time and focus, but the solution is there. If you just call it a problem, you know, some problems don't even have solutions. All puzzles have answers. Just reframing, just changing the way you think about things makes a big difference. So the past two weekends, I was at two different writing conferences. I talked about NINC a little bit last time, the Novelists Inc. conference in Florida. This past weekend, I was closer to home in Rockville, Maryland at the Capclave conference, which is the local science fiction and fantasy literary themed conference. It's pretty small. I generally go to it. I mean, I've been several times and I was exhausted after NINC, but in the end, as I always am, I'm glad that I went. But it really underscored, like it drove home how the publishing industry is actually multiple industries. And it's something that I know and I've experienced, especially being hybrid. You know, the NINC conference, I think it used to be more traditionally published authors. Now it's definitely very, very much more indie authors. And the speakers and the mindset of the people there is very business focused. In order to get into the organization, NINC, you have to, if you're trad, I think you have to show your advance. If you're indie, you have to have a certain sales history, I believe. So it's not for beginners. It's not for aspiring writers. It's really very much professional. You are in the trenches. And that's also probably a difference too. But the Capclave conference being, there's a lot of indies there, but it's much more small press. It's much more short stories. It is a different side of the industry. So we're not just talking about the divide between trad and indie, between self-published and traditionally published, but between the things that you write and the way that you're thinking about it. If you're a short story writer, if you are an author with a very small press, then the concerns that you have, while similar, like everyone wants to sell books, but it's just the conversations are so different. The mindset is so different. And me sort of hovering, kind of going back between them and wanting to have it all, but witnessing, listening to these conversations, listening to how people talk about things, being high input, taking it all in. It was just, you know, a tale of two conferences, I was thinking. And also just because there are different mindsets involved when you think about it more as an art or as a business. That's the other divide. It's like the artist, you know, you're really focused on craft and message and theme and all of those things, which I think lend themselves more to maybe small press or, well, traditional publishing. I think that if you want to be very successful as an indie, you are less concerned with polishing and revising lots of times and all of that, because you understand the mechanics of the business don't require that. And this is just talking in very broad general strokes. But, you know, if you know that you have to publish quickly to serve your audience who is voracious and whale readers, then five revisions is just not going to make a financial difference to you, you know. Whereas if you are doing it for other reasons, if the craft is the highest importance for you, then tinkering and spending a longer time with the story and with the words makes sense. But also your expectations of the financial aspects are different as well. And so, yeah, it is just being in those two environments so close together just really highlighted the dichotomy of the industry. I mean, there's many industries inside of the publishing industry, in terms of the fiction publishing industry, because there's certainly other types of publishing. But it was just another example of me being struck by being in, you know, me being the same me in these different environments and hearing how people go about their business, go about their art, go about combining the two of them. Which one tips the scales? You know, which one are you focused on? The other thing I wanted to talk about was this book that just came out, and I did an event with the author, Ariel Kaplan, a few days ago in DC. It's also online. I will track down the replay and put it in the show notes. The book is The Pomegranate Gate. It is a historical fantasy that takes place in a time analogous to the Spanish Inquisition, and it's based on Jewish folklore, and it was fantastic. So I had agreed to do this event. I wasn't familiar with Ariel, but the bookstore, I did another event with the bookstore, East City Books. It's down in Capitol Hill by Eastern Market. And so they sent me an ARC, and it's huge. It's 150,000 words. And I was like, oh. And I was on deadline, and I was just like, I cannot read this entire book before I talk to her. So my goal was just to read a few hundred pages, you know, get through the first few chapters, get enough that I could talk about it intelligently without having read the whole thing. So the event was on Thursday. I started reading on Sunday, and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to finish this entire book. This is really good. So every day I was like, you know, reading hundreds of pages. I mean, it's a 550-page book. But it was so good. It did not feel long. And essentially the story is, it takes place in, like I said, kind of Spain. It's a fantasy-ish version of Spain where there has been a war and the new queen is expelling the Jews. You know, they have to either convert or leave. So that's like the grounded storyline. It's this very tense, taut tale of people leaving where they've lived for generations to try to find some place that's safe. And then there are these magical creatures called the Mazik, who are kind of like elves. They're very elfish in their way, although I'm not sure if they have pointed ears, but their eyes, the pupils are rectangular like goats. And there's a dream world and there's a mirror world where they live, and certain characters get pulled through a gate into this mirror world. And there are basically two parallel stories with these two main characters. And it is just so delightful, like the world that was created, the magic system, the story, and how it's sort of grounded in real history and real culture. And so when we were talking at the event just about her thought process and her decision making and how she was pulling from, you know, the idea of demons, I think in Jewish folklore and mythology, not calling them demons, that's why she called them Mazik, and how there's these different stories throughout, I guess, the Jewish diaspora of them, and choosing her own way of telling them. And it was very much similar to what I did in The Monsters We Defy with like African-American folk magic and the way you have conjure and root work and then santeri and candomblé and voodoo. And they're pulling from West African religions and traditions and folklore and mythology and all of that. But as people spread out, they changed it depending on where they were and the belief systems of where they ended up. Things changed, having to be seen to convert to Christianity. Just, you know, the slaves had to do that. And in certain places, Jews had to do that as well. And just hearing about the process was fascinating, in addition to really adoring the book. So highly recommended. I think that it's a really good example of pulling on culture for world building. We talked a little bit about Naomi Novik, who I'm sure there are people doing, you know, fantasy based on Jewish folklore for a long time, but she became extremely popular with Uprooted and Spinning Silver for doing that. And Ariel was saying how it sort of let her know that she could do it too. And that's the power of representation when, you know, you can see someone achieving success with showing their culture, which is your culture, and creating something beautiful out of it. And yeah, it was just a cool conversation. Very cool book. Definitely check it out if you are into fantasy. Also this week, I saw that recently there was a Tiny Desk concert on NPR for Wicked, which is one of my very favorite musicals of all time. It is tied at the top with Hamilton for the musical I've seen the most time on stage. I've seen them both 5 times on stage, Broadway, off-Broadway, touring companies. So I love Wicked. It is the current Broadway cast, the Elphaba and the Galinda, and Stephen Schwartz was there playing the piano and telling stories about how he created it. So Stephen Schwartz is the lyricist and the composer of Wicked, along with many other musicals. And it was absolutely fascinating to hear him talk about like adapting, because it was based on a book that's very different from the musical, choosing what to adapt, creating some of the songs, the inspiration for certain songs, writing certain lyrics. Like, it was 20 minutes and my mind was just blown. And then they're singing my favorite songs and so inspiring. So if you like musicals, if you like Wicked and you haven't checked out the Tiny Desk concert, I will link to it. Definitely check it out. Other big news in the publishing world, there is this tool that allows you to check your books if you are probably traditionally published books, but I'm not sure in terms of seeing if they were used to train certain AI models. And I checked, and Song of Blood and Stone and Whispers of Shadow and Flame are on the list. They were used to train these AI models. How do I feel about that? Because a lot of authors are up in arms and upset. And in general, I don't know if I'm AI positive or AI neutral. I'm AI accepting. I'm not trying to, you know, beat against the wheel. It's not the metaphor I was trying for, but it's here. No one's going to get rid of it because people have spent millions or billions of dollars developing it. It's not great for some people. It's helpful in some ways. It might, you know, destroy us all and end humanity as we know it. But what can I do about that? So yeah, I'm going to use ChatGPT. I use Claude and Poe and a couple of, and Midjourney. I love Midjourney. So yeah, which maybe I'm AI positive or AI neutral. I think AI neutral because, I mean, I kind of wish it wasn't here, but it is. So I might as well use it until we all are taken into the void by Skynet. I'm not super upset that my books have been used to train the AI models. I'm not planning to put, there's like language that you can put on your copyright page to say, don't use my book in AI models. But like, eh, I guess I'm just kind of blasé about it. And maybe it's being fatalistic. But my father always said, don't worry about what you can't control. And I literally can do nothing to control this. So I am not going to get upset about it. And I'm going to continue using Midjourney. And I'm going to continue to find ways to pay actual human artists to do things because I think that's important too. But in the instances where, you know, I wasn't going to anyway, then yeah, I like using the tools. That is my official stance. I wanted to give a special shout out to friend of the podcast, author Zigzag Claiborne. His Kickstarter is blowing up. It just started, I guess, a few days ago. It's already funded, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't still check it out and fund it. It is for book one of his Kamala trilogy called Breath, Warmth, and Dream, which is a story about a family of witches, a mother and daughter. It looks amazing. I'm going to be cracking open the arc soon. And yes, please check it out. I've already supported it. And this thing, the outpouring of support that he is getting for his Kickstarter, and it's very well deserved. He just seems like a very warm presence in the writing world. And so I'm happy to support it and happy to check out his books. And I will link to it in the show notes as well. So that's it for me for this week. My goal is to get 15,000 words over the next 7 days in my manuscript for Brutal Fortress and make my newly scheduled deadline for the first draft. Try not to stress too much about the editing process. I've got some other exciting things planned. Preptober continues Mondays and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, live on YouTube. Check out the replay. If you want to get the updates in your inbox about when the videos drop, that's at myimaginaryfriends.net/nano. And also, I'm planning another podcast with someone else, with one of my best friends for the past 20 years, author Inez Johnson. So we were just in a planning meeting this week. We are going to be seeding the ground. I'm going to be designing the logo and putting all of the production technical things in place for us to be able to do this. I will talk more about it later. But yeah, it'll be nice to talk to someone else sometimes, someone who's one of my best friends in the whole world. So yeah, stay tuned for that. And I hope that you have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you next time. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriends.net. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can watch the video episodes on YouTube and email me at podcast@lpenelope.com. I would really appreciate a rating or review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.